bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Weird Things podcast. I am, of course, Bryce Castillo, joined, as always, with Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
And Justin Robert Young.
Hey!
This is the Science Meets Fiction podcast that we always do, just the three of us, every week here on WeirdThings.com.
So, thanks for joining me, guys. Always in studio together, too. That's the other thing. People may not remember. Like, nobody ever calls in. We're all three in the same studio.
That's right.
Yep. Yep. This is it. I'm here in Austin, Texas, doing the show with you guys. That's what happens all the time.
Yeah.
That's why it sounds so good.
That's right. So, guys, I don't know if you've been outside lately, but you shouldn't. There's a pandemic going on.
Oh, here. Okay. I was about to say, okay. We definitely shot outside all day yesterday. What's going on?
Oh, wait a minute. Can I ask you guys a question? Yeah. How big of a faux pas is it to call it a global pandemic?
Because
obviously it's redundant, right? But is it like
you're ATM
a
machine.
Big fat idiot redundant, or is it ATM machine?
No. It is exactly as much of a crime as it is to call it heavy metal, because all metals are heavy. But it's more fun to say heavy metal. Forget, if you're going to bother to live through a global pandemic, you might as well call it a global pandemic at every single time you get to say it.
That's what my instinct is, to keep saying global pandemic. But then also I'm like, oh, but I know, because I don't know if you're aware of this, Brian, but we speak for a living on the internet.
Yes.
And when you speak for a living on the internet, you tend to have people remind you that things are right or wrong, or silently keep it within them before they pour forth in some kind of public fashion. So I just don't know. Bryce, where are you at on this?
My worry with global pandemic is not the redundancy, but almost the sensationalism, the worry of like, oh, well, he said global pandemic. Is he really trying to just rile me up now?
Oh, my God. You guys are misunderstanding all of this. This is what's great about it, is that it is the perfect excuse for literally anything. Like, I'm sorry that this was due last night, but it came in this morning. It's just with the global pandemic and all.
There's a big one going on outside.
Your deadline doesn't sound so important, does it?
But even more than just I guess you're right. It does have that flourish to it.
Yeah. It rolls off the tongue. Global pandemic.
I tweeted out my sentiment of like, I'm genuinely torn between my desire to look trim and proper, like I've got my act together, but also the acknowledgement that in my entire life, there will never, ever, hopefully, be a time like this where it's more forgivable for me to be shaggy than right now. And it's sure. Like,
this is it.
Wouldn't it be a shame if I was clean shaven, looking good behind
not taking advantage of the situation, finding all of your silver linings.
Yes.
You know, it is important that people stay inside. You know, I've got a little bit of a question here for you guys. How would you say in your community, in your neighborhood, on your block, whatever, What is something that you would do to try to keep people from going out at night, hanging out, loitering around on the street, or, what would you do if you were tasked with trying to keep people inside at night without setting a big law, making a curfew, you know, playing the purge siren?
The drones going up and down the street saying, this is pandemic patrol, go back inside.
That's an option. I think that's an option. I'm just saying, free of legislation before.
Yeah, no,
short
free
of, that.
Of free of at the barrel of a gun. Like, is there a way that you can keep people inside in some soft social way? All right, in fact, all right, Brian, you are now a crazy billionaire, and you are trying. You don't have any legal recourse at all. You can't call the cops. But you're trying, you believe very much that people need to stay in their house and you have infinite money. How would you make people stay in their house?
I would hire three individuals to sit at a table with X's in front of them. And I would buy a PA system, and wherever they were in front, they would just start commentating on their hot takes about how they judge their appearance, how they handle things, whether they, and occasionally somebody will hit a buzzer and say, I want them out of here. This sucks. And then I would hire extras to just immediately boo in the background. And I feel like between all that, it would make it a fairly unpopular place for people to go.
A roving
gang.
People
would just be like, screw this. I'm staying inside. These guys suck.
Exactly.
You get a Howie Mandel lookalike to host this.
I mean, hell, I could probably afford Howie Mandel if I'm a billionaire.
So, I mean, like, that is an interesting solution. If the goal is to keep people inside, you would spend a lot of money and hire a bunch of people to create a spectacle outside. But I appreciate the hustle. I would just have something like, I would make it more Halloween Horror Nights. So maybe the same idea, but instead it's just like, oh, there's a pandemic, but also wolves are attacking people. And just like every once in a while, like, oh, I defy this order. Screw you, 1776, my freedom. Oh my God. Ah, this wolf, it's ripping my arm off. Oh God. Like, that'll keep people in because they're not going to want to be attacked by a wolf.
That's an interesting idea, Justin, scaring the public.
Now we have seen kind of similar what economists call nudges when it comes to, like, there were teenagers that were gathering around bus stops, so they started playing classical music at bus stops. The another just so story is teenagers hanging around certain areas, they would put up lights with pink filters that accentuated the zits that they had on their face, because a lot of teenagers have acne, and so it was just like I don't want to be there. I've seen what I look like there. So I'm assuming we're talking about that kind of nudge, right?
That's really clever. If have you ever done that? Like if
chased off a bunch of teenagers from a bus stop by putting a pink filter on a light. Look, I don't. If you, I'm sorry. Am I being detained?
Yeah.
I have my pocket constitution right here. No, ever take a selfie of yourself in front of just a red light? Like if you use the camera app on your phone, it'll look really nice. But if you use something like Snapchat, which like kind of has to do doesn't
is, deals it, with the raw data.
Yeah, it looks terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a really interesting idea. Kind of nudging people, really like pushing
them. Wouldn't that
them,
be great?
Saying,
okay, hold on.
So what would you do for at night?
Hold on. So imagine what you do is you put a bunch of cameras around and they just have placards that say, this camera is live and it is a very wide angle lens or a very telephoto lens or whatever people are most afraid of. Which one makes you look the fattest?
So wait, hold on. What if those drones, we were joking about the fact that, you know, there's been some speculation that some police departments want to have drones to enforce social distancing. Instead of them, like, identifying people, we take that surveillance state element, but all it does is just take unflattering pictures of you. All the drones fly, like, low angle, and, like, they're just getting all your chins, and you just always look like crap. And you are, it is like now paparazzi.
So here's the moral question that we have to deal with, because on the one hand, I actually think that would be amazingly effective. But here in America, we have it, I believe, in law that you are not allowed to shame people publicly for their debts. Because number one, it's very, very effective. Number two, it caused people to commit suicide. That whole business of the image of like a pilgrim with their hands and arms and neck in a
stockade.
Yeah, that was there oftentimes as like, hey man, you owed this money, you never paid it. I mean, what's so bad about spending a day in the stockade or whatever? Sure. But the shame was so
literally
bad.
A debtor's prison.
Yes. And in fact, I want to say 20 years ago, there was a story in Venezuela of a new program where they would publicly shame debtors with a character called Dr. Diablo in Venezuela, who would show up to people's places of business and wearing a mask, a devil mask, and shamed them for not paying their debts. And it was one of those things that was reported at the time of, oh, what a novel way to get these deadbeats to, you know, pay their debts or whatever. But then the follow-up articles that I read were the ones that said, no. Shaming people for their debts is so endemic to the American constitutional DNA that it's literally written into all of our laws that it's like you can either pay your debts or not. If you can't pay it, then that's on them for making a bad risk. But we don't shame our people here.
Hmm. Okay. So then that's a vote against drugs.
Against public shaming. Against
Okay. Well, you know, let's kind of take it back to kind of Justin's idea earlier about say a Halloween Horror Night. You know the village of Kepa in Indonesia?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Oh no, it's the best.
Well, they have something interesting called the Pokong. The Pokong. You mind if I show you a clip here?
Yeah, sure.
This is from our friends over at Reuters.
What is this? Is there audio to go with this? Somebody's we got a band playing. We got a band running away when somebody shows up in what looks like a wrapped up corpse about to be dropped off the side of a boat.
That's right. The audio is just of the reporters telling the story. But this is the Pokong, a group of community volunteers who wear bed sheets caked in white makeup, who go out at night and scare the locals who are loitering around outside.
All right, so this was pre-pandemic then. Like, they already wanted to scare people back in, and now it has just, like, created a righteous cause.
This article is only 2 weeks old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So this is for the pandemic?
This is because of the pandemic, that's right.
Oh, my God.
Why are these motherfuckers outside then? Sorry, I cursed. Why are these people outside?
Because it's a very good question. You know, Indonesia is being hit particularly hard by COVID-19. It's one of the hardest hit in Asia. And I don't know whether it's a cultural thing, whether people maybe don't take it quite as seriously. But in fact, when they first started doing the Pokong, it actually did incentivize people to go out more because they wanted to go see the ghosts. And they have this very distinctive gait because they're tied up, their hands and their legs are tied up. So they have to, like, bunny hop around. They can't really walk. And so to solve that, they became a kind of surprise patrol. So you wouldn't really know when or where they would be deployed.
That seems like
so
that
they
would
weren't,
work.
People weren't banging banging pots and pans like they do for essential workers when the ghosts came out every night.
Yeah. I mean, this feels like this would last about 2 weeks before all of a sudden your new reaction to seeing these guys would be to try to take a selfie with them and get up close next to them.
Maybe. I don't know. When Reuters visited the Kepa village, the supernatural strategy seemed to be working, with villagers running off in fright when the ghosts materialized. Quote, since the Pokong appeared, parents and children have not left their homes, and people will not gather or stay on the streets after evening prayers. It seems to be working so far.
Hmm.
I don't know. Do you think you could beat having people go around in
No, but number one, you're limiting the effectiveness of the Pokong, because if you are just listening to this, which most of you are, then they are hopping. Yes. Right? Like they are bound at the feet. So what you really want is for, like, trained military people
to
be creepily like being as discreet as possible and just terrifying people. Like, I'm almost positive that setup was obviously just, we're watching this clip of somebody hopping around the corner and then scaring a bunch of people. That looks like a setup to demonstrate what these people would do.
What the intended
effect is. What you really want is give them more, you want to give them more flexibility.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's supposedly working. We'll see. Maybe people will just
I agree, we should make it to where the streets are as scary as possible so nobody's on it. I propose one day a year there's no crimes that could be held against you and anyone could do anything they want. Then those would be some scary streets, wouldn't they?
Well, wait a minute. I mean, you're aware that there was a police department that got in trouble because they were playing the Purge siren.
The actual.
Oh, were they really?
Yeah.
Did not. Oh.
When they were enforcing the actual curfew in Crowley, Louisiana. Supposedly they had no idea, but. You gotta Google the Purge to get the siren.
Oh, somebody get at no! I don't buy that. There's zero chance that they just Googled scary siren and that's what they came up with. Somebody thought it would be funny. Somebody thought it would be clever. They love the movie, and they realized very quickly they couldn't.
I'm not familiar enough with the Purge, but I have to imagine it's as iconic as like the TARDIS sound or whatever. Like nobody's scraping a pick across. Yeah, that's fairly iconic.
Yeah, it's not the same as the full klaxon going all the way up.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. What is fun and a lot of good times every week is the Weird Things podcast. Isn't that right, fellas?
Oh, hell yeah. You know, ever since we've been doing this, the three of us, for years and years, we've been saying, if you like this, if you enjoy this moment each and every week where we break down weird stories in culture and science, then if you have the extra scratch, kick it our way. What do you say? Patreon.com/weirdthings. Isn't that right, Brian?
Kick it our way. What do you say? That's the URL. Don't check that URL because the government owns it. They swiped it out from underneath us, those nefarious bastards. Next thing you know, they're going to declare a no crime day. Look, you can stop all of this right now by pledging just $1 an episode at patreon.com/weirdthings.
There we go.
Hell yeah. If you do it, you get a bonus RSS feed. Pop it into the player of your choice and you get the After Things podcast before anybody else, baby.
That's right. Thank you. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Hey, boys, it's me, Bryce Nassa. And
oh, my God. I've been wondering where you went.
I've got something very special for you guys. I've got a crack at the dark side of the moon. I'd like you to pitch me something that you could do with the dark side of the moon, the land, and you might win funding.
My first thought was put a telescope there because then you would be shielded away from all the noise of planet Earth. But then I remembered that, the dark side of the moon's always dark. Yeah, I stick to my original plan. Put a telescope there. Put a bird on it. And by that bird, I mean a telescope, a big old radio telescope array.
Okay. How would you build a telescope? Broadly speaking, how would you put a telescope on that?
It would be like the very large array here on planet Earth. It would be a bunch of parabolic dishes that did radio telescopy. And because the moon is tidally locked with planet Earth, the same side is always facing planet Earth, which means the backside is the one that would have a giant planetoid-sized shield that would allow you to get a fairly noise-free view of the entire galaxy.
Okay, that's such a good idea. I might accuse you of plagiarism of that one.
Oh, shoot. Did I get it exactly right?
One of NASA's innovative advanced concepts
programs. Bryce, hold on. I want to get my guess in.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please, Justin. Also, what would you do with the dark side of the moon?
Silent disco. Let's see who's right.
Nothing but headphones and neon. That's as far as you can see.
Hypothesis.
I know it's been a while since we went up to the moon, but the next person who goes, boy, are they going to be pumped when they have a silent disco.
Hypothesis. Do AirPods work on the moon? We'll find out. So, yeah, this was one of many projects given funding by the Innovative Advanced Concepts program.
So I was right because I peaked promise that I did not read this in the news.
This is real. JPL roboticist Saptarshi Bandyopadhyay proposed to build a giant telescope on the far side of the moon in a crater.
Oh, this is great. It actually, if you're familiar, it looks like the Arecibo giant telescope. So not a very large array, but a single big old dish. And it's already been dug. The Arecibo, God, do I have to, I hate that I have to say it this way. As featured in GoldenEye. That's probably where you know it from. GoldenEye.
That's
maybe
fine.
The movie GoldenEye's Contact, fine. Hopefully, probably GoldenEye.
So the Lunar Crater Radio Telescope, or LCRT, would be an ultra-long wavelength radio telescope capable of capturing some of the weakest signals traveling throughout space. And like you said, Brian, because it's almost because it's always on the other side of Earth, it's shielded from the ionosphere, from noise, from physical debris. Yeah, I mean, that's you nailed it in one. You got it in one.
I'm surprised, and keep in mind, like maybe there was something about the way it was phrased that made me instantly think of that. But I almost wonder if the contest itself wasn't held so that we could all elect clearly the most beautiful baby to office.
There are
not Harley. What was that dude's name?
Brett Harley.
Bart
Jarvis.
Harley Jarvis. Yeah. Yeah.
There are other ideas. There are other space ideas, including instant landing pads, exploring the subsurface ocean of Jupiter's moon Europa, using antimatter to slow down interstellar spacecraft. There are other ideas going on here, but
yeah, but none as close or as simple as this one.
Well, NASA does still consider this to be low within the scope of how close we are technology-wise to solve this. Because the basic idea involves sending rovers, these due-axle rovers, to the moon to basically rig up a giant wire system to set up the structure of this device.
I mean, I guess if you pick the right crater, then it almost naturally is you know, a decent parabola to collect everything in one spot.
Well,
that doesn't seem like the craziest thing.
And they're using a mesh, so it wouldn't even necessarily be tied to the actual geography of the space. It would just have the head space to suspend.
Oh, that's interesting. So if it's a bunch of wires, let's say you're not quite a perfect parabola, then up on arm 375, you tug it a little bit tighter and it corrects the arc of it on there.
Yeah.
So then you're able to make it into a perfect parabola.
Yeah. And they take advantage of these duaxle rovers, which we're taking a little bit of a look at here, where they're like four-wheeled rovers that split apart. And so one side kind of anchors the whole contraption together up the top of the crater, and the other side will actually traverse down or up the crater connected by a wire.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. So
that's
looks
crazy.
Like a four-wheeled vehicle, and then suddenly the front part just runs forward and becomes like a sphero or something, rolls itself down the hill or back.
Yeah. Congratulations. Hopefully, maybe you can get your proposal in and steal your own $120,000.
What? Oh, man. That was the most. You buried the lead. And we were sitting here talking about this life-changing, epic, complete extravaganza, and then you find out that it's a dual income, no kids year salary.
$120,000.
It's phase one. It's phase. There are other phases in the IAC process, but it's exploratory.
Oh my god.
Gentlemen, we. Yeah. As a planet, the collective we, the Earthians. Is it Earthians? Earthlings?
Yes.
The Earthenites.
The human beings.
Earthers. Flat Earthers, because we're so even keel.
Yeah, that's right. We flattened the curve so hard that we changed our name to the Flat Earthers.
Yeah.
We're Earthers.
That's it.
Against coronavirus. That's right. We're all
exactly.
Together. We're the
Enough
Flat
of
Earthers.
You. We're not pointers. We're flatters.
No, we're flatters. Flatten the earth.
Yeah.
That's our slogan.
We'll flatter you.
We're flatterers. You know what? I like that shirt, Bryce. It looks great.
Oh, thank you. It's very
Brian, I think those glasses are very smart.
Justin, I love your very smart jacket. It was very, very nice.
Whoa, like what a bunch of flatterers underneath. We are.
Flat earthers.
So
that's it.
We as a planet are kind of locked.
I love how we just did better PR for flat earth people in 5 seconds. Than they've had for several hundred years.
We should be like in the spin room for Flat Earth.
I know. I feel like we should be like, hi, we're the Weird Things podcast. A lot of you might be thinking that's easy. We should have come up with flatterers over 50 years ago.
So we, as a planet, are kind of locked in orbit, right? We orbit the sun, as do the other planets, our other neighboring planets.
Only because we choose to. I mean, look, if we wanted to, we can get out of this orbit anytime we want. It's just that we're going to wait for the new Call of Duty to come out first, and then we got to get through that.
What would be cooler than orbiting the sun?
I mean,
might as well be walking on the sun.
That sounds like Gary talk. Gary left a while ago. Oh, he was talking that way. And now he's gone.
Now he's sleeping with the fishes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also sleeping.
Exactly.
With the fishes. So, yeah. You know, a planet orbiting a sun, that's fine. But, you know, it's the 90s and we really need a cooler orbit. Folks, I would like to introduce you to Galaxy GSN 069. It's very nice. This is 250 million light years away.
Took me a second to hear it.
And it contains two fascinating objects that are locked into this beautiful eternal dance.
Is it Gary? Gary's one of them, isn't it? It's Gary and Bernice. God damn it. I knew it. Gary and Bernice out there doing their fancy dance like Gary always talked about. He said, Earth's orbit is too elliptical.
Fancy dancing Gary.
So the first object is a dying star in this galaxy. It is it was a red giant that was in the beginning phases of death for
back in the 60s.
A moderate sized star. It used to
be on the silver screen, and now he's doing episodes of Knight Rider. Am I right? Oof.
That's right. And it would have been on its way, you know, dissipating heat and hydrogen until it met a black hole.
Uh-oh.
And now happens a lot, right? Where a star goes into a black hole and then it lights up the sky because of how black holes work. What if it didn't do that?
Explain that to me again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if a black hole just wasn't black-holing?
Well, no, the black hole is still there. But what if the star was orbiting the black hole?
I mean, what else is it going to do?
I don't think we should star shame. Like, that star is just going
to
do whatever it wants.
We
should support it.
Some kind of Hollywood celebrity producer relationship about a star orbiting a black hole.
A Star is Born, starring Lady Gaga. That kind of works.
Yeah. Well, except for that she.
I feel like we should eject from this line of thought because it is only fraught with peril.
So this dying star fell into the orbit of the black hole, but not, and it doesn't cross the event horizon. It's about 15 times further away from the radius of the event horizon. And so now it orbits the black hole in 9-hour cycles. Every 9 hours.
What?
It orbits this black hole.
A star moves around a black hole every 9 hours?
That's right.
That's like a year in their terms.
That it's the definition of how we would define a year.
I would be a billion years old by now.
Nah.
That's right.
If you were living on this star.
On a 9-hour year.
Oh, well, no. Yeah, that's a good point. There's no way anything can orbit the star. This is Gary talk. This is the way Gary always was. He was like, don't think about that, man. That's Earth-centric thinking. And I'm like, more like sinking.
Thinking, that's right. So it's only when
more like stinking, like this idea.
You know what? We very rarely take a political stance here on the Weird Things podcast, but Gary, this is a bad idea. Would you knock it off? We get it. We get it. You got a nice star.
Exactly.
Spinning around a black
hole. Gary,
please.
Gary, we all let you go for a while, but now it's just stars and black holes. It's enough, Gary. Jesus.
We get it. You did it. Good for you. That's a fine
good
circle you're doing.
Good for you.
So along this 9-hour cycle, it's only when it gets when its orbit is the closest to the black hole that it just ekes out little bits of material from now a white dwarf.
Most of that ends up on Saturday Night Live.
That's right. And so what's interesting is we found this out. This was because it is giving out X-rays as a part of this cycle. The Chandra X-ray Observatory noticed that every 9 hours it was receiving this X-ray signal from 250 million light years away. Like it's kind of insane that we know this much about
extraordinary blast. This is pumping out an extraordinary amount of energy.
Similar to like a gamma ray burst or something, but it happens to be in the X-ray spectrum.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, at least per the researcher who studied this, here's his quote: "In astronomical terms, the event is only visible to our current telescopes for a very short time, about 2,000 years. So unless we were extraordinarily lucky to have caught this one, there may be many more that we are missing."
Hear that, Gary? Not so special after
all.
Everyone that
Gary.
High at 4 a.m. had the same idea.
Mm. And now the emperor has no clothes, huh, Gary? a common occurrence. No more rare than a two-sided penny.
But I don't know. I think this is such a fascinating story. The fact that there is a star, you know, that is orbiting a black hole. It hasn't necessarily.
No, that is crazy. That is insane.
In.
How far away is this?
250 million light years away.
So, a black hole. I would imagine, mathematically speaking, I mean, just as likely a thing to have an orbit is as a star or whatever. But a black hole has such a steep gravity well that it's just the rarity. It's like things tend to either go right in or cruise right on by.
Right. Like, you don't have the ability to slingshot past it.
Yeah. It's a thinner band of success than something a little more loosey goosey. I really like that. You know, you think about space time, that fabric as everything made of latex, and you just sort of barely pull something down and then you roll a marble around, you're going to get these big sweeping arcs or whatever. But if you pull that, you know, way down, then it's like that marble is either going in or done. So, mm-hmm. So it's, I guess in the entire galaxy, it would be a statistical certainty that we'd see something like this sooner or later, but, mm-hmm. but a rare gem nonetheless.
Yeah. Supposedly they believe that, the now white dwarf will continue to orbit the black hole and eke away material for trillions of years.
I'm going to guess that there's no stable way for there to be a third body to orbit that star. I'm going to guess that...
probably not, given how fast it goes around and... the
9 hours! It does a lap around the... Yeah. well, and also, like, that being such a narrow gravitational band that it can hang in, mm-hmm. like just the wideness of even, like, a Mercury-distant planet, I would imagine that's going to get sucked into the black hole really fast.
Yeah, or it might have to be some sort of perfect orbit where it's always on the opposite side of the black hole. But it's fascinating, you know. I wonder if we're going to find any more of those over the next trillion years. Who knows? You know something that we don't know?
What's that, Bryce?
Name one thing, Gary. I mean, Bryce.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. What a reveal.
You know, some scientists believe that meteors hit Earth at an average of 17 times a day.
That doesn't sound unreasonable. How big are we defining a meteor as?
I think anything that
makes it all the way down to the surface. Okay, so not shooting stars, but actual, you know, rocks that bonk old ladies on the head.
Right.
Yeah.
But for all of that, right, we don't really have material reports of anyone dying from a meteorite or a meteor.
I assume that is true, but it's so hard to believe given... the numbers.
I mean, it's tough, right? Like, you know, think about Earth's landmass.
Yeah, but there's like so much land, mm-hmm. right?
And so
like,
much
we are biased to thinking that like all that matters is the stuff that we are looking at. But even in our, you know, you drive from Austin to San Antonio and you're looking at so much just totally unoccupied land that like you probably wouldn't know if something landed in there, let alone you know, hitting somebody,
right?
Let alone killing them.
And even if that did happen, having someone notice the event and confirm, you know, that it is from an extraterrestrial, extra space rock, right?
Yeah,
confirming it's also a space rock.
In fact, hey man, is that space rock? We'll turn it up.
Beep bop boop bop boop beep bop. These are the space rock songs we rock. Boop, bop, beep, bop, beep, bop,
hey man, boop. I didn't know that Space Rocks was the Teletubbies. I'm too high to recognize anything. Anyone seen Gary around?
Get bent. We're playing Space Rock. Beep, bop, boop, bop, beep, bop, boop, beep.
That's a
screw
science
you, Dad. You don't know my Space Rock. Slams the door.
You've got a. He's got an astronaut helmet coming out with a mullet behind it.
Behind the door, Genesis starts playing or Sticks.
Yeah.
In fact, a fun fact, the only confirmed injury directly by a meteorite, not by the shockwaves of it, but actual by the rock, is in 1954 when Ann Hodges was struck in the hip while taking a nap on her couch. It blasted through the roof and it hit her in the hip.
The closest thing I've ever seen was it was actually a Central Texas news story. A dude owned a bunch of farmland and was saying, "So anyway, I did a patrol and counted all my cows, then went home. Next day went out and this was there." And what you saw looked like a collapsed, rusted, giant milk canister. And he goes, he's like, "You know, we're far enough out. Ain't nobody come, ain't nobody go. Only one place it could have come from." And then he like conspicuously points up at the stars. And then, and I'm just like, okay, crazy person thinks, you know, junk fell out of the sky. And then the news report ended with, I think it was KXAN or KVUE, one of the local affiliates, saying, "Yeah, so we called NASA and they said, yep, that's the second stage of a satellite we just sent up." straight up landed in his cow pasture.
Whoa. Funny story, Googling that actually did find a meteor that hit a cow, a live cow in Venezuela.
No way.
In 1972, identified as a meteorite.
I bet that was delicious.
I bet it probably did taste pretty good. Get a good sear on it.
Exactly. You know, you're just cutting into that fine steak. You put it into your mouth and you can just hear it. Beep, bop,
Well, now with the new digitized records from, I believe, the Ottoman Empire, someone might have to correct me on that, we believe we may have found our first instance, our first noticed instance of a lethal meteorite victim. In what we now call Suleymaniye in Iraq, Turkish records indicate that in 1888, a large fireball was visible in the sky around 8:30 p.m. After that spotting, meteorites rained from the sky, resulting in the death of an unnamed man, the paralytic injury of an unnamed man, and loss of crops. While scientists don't have the rock to confirm its origin, they believe that the sourcing of the documents give it legitimacy. Quote, "Due to the fact that these documents are from official government sources and written by local authorities, even Grand Vizier himself as well, we do not have any suspicion of their reality." Because there are still many more documents to be digitized and many digitized documents that they have not fully examined yet, they believe there may even be more to this paper trail to back it up or to give it some legitimacy.
You know who the hero of the story is that dude that was paralyzed. Because if it was two people killed, we wouldn't be hearing about this. But no. Someone gets paralyzed by a space rock for years. Uncle Gary is telling about it. "And I seen that green fire come down from the sky and knock me right in the leg. That's why I can't work.
It was this big."
Yes.
Oh my. Imagine if you actually got paralyzed by a meteor and nobody wants to hear the story. And everyone's just like, whatever. Oh my God. Like,
we get it. God's wrath. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Fire in the sky. Now you're paralyzed. We should go to church. I get it.
There's another like interesting subtext to this story from Science Alert. The find is an interesting one because it points to a large gap in our knowledge, the researchers point out. It's not just that the historical record is vast, but it's also understudied, and there's a lack of work on historical documents in languages other than English.
Man, all of this stuff basically boils down to this stuff is very tedious, and humans have better things to do with their time. This is all going to change just in the next 10 years with the AIs crawling through all that stuff, finding patterns and you know, taking all these disparate threads of, you know, like, let's say some crazy rainbow meteor hit, but only one in 100,000 people reported on it. But it was a global event that caused a rainbow to go all around the world. Then it's going to take an AI and not a human to piece together, look at this story, look at that story, look at that other story. But on the flip side, that means conspiracy theorists, you could just say, "Tell me a story, make me believe blank." And then robots will be able to go out and find all enough pieces to be like, "Oh, shoot, I guess that beard length does affect gold prices. I didn't know that." Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. This is very interesting. And yeah, apparently part of the difficulty with this is that it was in Ottoman Turkish, which is rather difficult to translate, and I don't know if it's still in use anymore. So, you know, that's part of it, is like, as AI is able to, you know, do what is it, OCR.
Yeah, optical character recognition.
You know, as that gets better in our understanding of not just current language, but, you know, ancient languages go, like, that's just a matter of time.
Well, and on top of that, there was recycling of paper. I remember, man, seeing some story years ago where it's like once a page had faded enough, like there was a copy of the Bible that had faded enough that somebody was like, well, this looks like I can write down my grocery shopping on it. And so they had to figure out like what the faded underneath part was.
Wow. There we go. I got one last story for you guys.
Okay.
Story. We're gonna listen to a little bit of a clip here. I wanted to.
I swear to God, I want nothing more than for it to be Gary talking about, like, I sent this green meteor down. I was able to cripple one of them. The other one died. You're still talking about it.
Gary sucks so bad.
Gary does seem like he sucks.
God, hey, man, Gary, he's not sucks. A dying white dwarf. He's just a white dwarf. We all die eventually. It's me, Gary. I'm very high right now.
God.
Gary.
High-ass Gary.
Ugh. He's playing his space rock really loud in his old Chevy.
Oh, God. That stuff sucks, too.
No good. Give me the classics. Give me classic space rock.
Oh, God. Yeah. You know, like, beep, boop, boop, beep.
Got my lighter out.
Sounds of Science.
Those are jams.
Remember when Simon and Garfunkel wrote that song, The Sounds of Science?
Oh, dude,
Poop, 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 poop.
Do you remember when George Bush did this song?
Go shorty, it's your birthday. We done party like it's your birthday. And we done sip Bacardi like it's your birthday. And you know we done give a fuck, it's not your birthday. You can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Look, mommy, I got the X if you into taking drugs. I'm into having sex. I ain't into making love.
So, all right, we all remember that classic, right?
I do.
That's a banger, yeah.
That was what he was reading to children when 9/11 happened. a lot of people don't know that.
That was, lost to history, but that was the My Pet Goat book was actually the original thing that 50 used for in the club later.
So if I were to guess where this is headed, this is more of that deep fake stuff.
I mean, we're just going back. We're just going down the music hall.
This is just, you know, in the aughts. I think if this is going to end where I think it's going to end, it is intensely remarkable.
But there is also like,
I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other brothers can deny that when a girl walks in with an itty bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get sprung. When a pull up tough, does she notice that butt was stuffed deep in the jeans she's wearing? I'm hooked.
Of course,
I can't
the classic President Bill Clinton. Baby got
back. That was what he said after the Oklahoma City bombing. I remember that.
Exactly.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
He wanted a moment of healing to bring us all together, much like America's butt cheeks. That's what they called it. They're like, let us be America's butt cheeks and come together.
I mean, of course,
in this moment,
liberal media never reported it.
And, you know, like, there are other, you know, we've just uncovered some old Frank Sinatra, right?
You can dance, you can jump, having the time of your life. Well, see that girl, what's that scene, digging the dancing queen.
You know, just science is great. No, this is a YouTube channel called Vocal Synthesis. And they have created all of these models on tons of different public figures and speakers. A lot of the presidents. Most recently, they got into a little bit of thing with Roc Nation because they've got some Jay-Z ones on here. And,
that's the one that. So, Brian, are you familiar with the Navy SEAL copy pasta?
Is that the one on Reddit where people are talking about how badass they're? No, let me tell you what a badass I am.
I'll have you know that I graduated top of my class in the Navy SEALs, and I've been involved in numerous secret raids on Al Qaeda. I have over 300 confirmed kills, and I'm trained in guerrilla warfare. Well, what you might not remember is that apparently was a real big hit for Jay-Z.
Yeah, like
what the fuck did you just fucking say about me, you little? All of you know I graduated top of my class in the Navy SEALs, and I've been involved in number of secret raids.
Pause it. There's somebody put a beat to this, and it actually slaps. Google it. It's on SoundCloud. Mm-hmm. But somebody put a beat to this, and it actually, like, because when it echoes, you can hear the artifacting of the you know, software or whatever. Yeah. Like, there's just like that.
You can
hint.
See the flangey edges of it.
But like, if it sounds like it does when the beat's under it, like you're just downloading a Jay-Z song off Grokster in 2004, there is a reality that comes with this particular copypasta if Bryce is able to find it.
Let me see. Is this it?
What the f*** did you just
there
say
we go.
About me, you little bitch? All of you know I graduated top of my class in the Navy SEALs, and I've been involved in numerous secret raids on Al-Qaeda, and I have over 300 confirmed kills. I'm training guerrilla warfare, and I'm the top sniper in the entire U.S. Armed Forces. You are nothing to me but just another target. I would wipe you the f*** out with precision and likes it, which has never been seen before on this earth. Mark my f***ing walls. You think you can get away with saying that shit to me over the internet? Think again, f***.
I 100% would believe, like outside of the beginning of it or whatever, if you just gave me a snippet of the middle, would 100% have believed this to be real.
Yeah, it's very cool. But yeah, apparently they had done two more Jay-Z ones, this vocal synthesis YouTube channel did, that I guess got pulled down by Roc Nation.
Really?
It was actually, we do have a mirror of one of them. They had Jay-Z covering, well, let's see if we can just load it up and just maybe just play it here.
Pacific, Weather Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Jim McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe, Rosenberg's H-Bone, Sugar Ray, Penn Majong, Brando, The King and I, in the Catcher in the Rye, Eisenhower, vaccine and Lens, got a new queen, Marshall, Lever Achie, Santana, goodbye. We didn't start the fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire. No, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it. Joseph Stalin, Malenkov, Nesterin, Prokofiev,
oh, cool.
Rocky.
That's amazing. This one got taken down by which entity?
By the Jay-Z side. That one and
so
that.
But in that case, fascinating.
Like, do they own the sound of his voice? How would one protect that?
No.
And how does one?
If anything, Billy Joel's people would
have songwriting
chops. Though, is it being published as a song? We're not exactly sure.
And not only that, it's like, who's making money on it? What money are you shutting down?
But then the question becomes, and this is where we have legal casework to be built, is do you own the vocals that it was modeled after? Because it was certainly modeled after Jay-Z songs, right? Like, are you reproducing, like, is that a sufficient synthesis? It's crazy. I can't believe it got pulled down.
Yes, it is. And keep in mind, a pull down on what was it, YouTube or what?
On YouTube, what, yeah.
Okay, so like,
could be many things.
Yeah, YouTube stuff is pretty easy to pull down. All you have to do is threaten to maybe think about calling a lawyer, and then people usually pull stuff down. Yeah. But from a legal framework, I don't think they have a leg to stand on. I think that is a standalone piece of art. It's the equivalent of drawing an oil painting of Jay-Z, you know, holding up Building 5 or Building 7, whatever. You know,
yeah, Building 5.
I don't know which ones they are.
But it makes an interesting point, right? Because it's not them. Because we know there's a lot of like, hey, we have this machine learning that can make stuff sound like other songs. It can, you know, make instruments and sound like another song. But this is using someone's vocal data to recite an already existing published song.
Right.
And is there possibly fraud in that? Well, deception?
So here's what.
Don't you own the right to your own voice to some degree? Should
culturally,
you?
Like, I don't know where that line of parody ends. And like, is a deep fake parody or is it legal? Because if you're going to say, Bernie Burns over at Rooster Teeth recently said, deep fakes are not parody and they're not protected and they should not be protected. But then I'm like, Well, by that logic, is that how we feel about Photoshops? All Photoshops are not protected?
Well, and then what happens when, all right, let's say that, like, okay, you can't train it on 100% of somebody's voice or face or video or something. But then you're like, all right, well, then what is the legal limit? Can I train it on enough legally allowed Jay-Z as long as there's other people who are doing a Jay-Z impression that still gets me to the point where I can now produce this voice? Like,
my understanding is from the very little bit of legal precedent that there is out there about this today, you are allowed to use that. You're allowed to use copyrighted material to train train a machine learning. But as far as publishing, you know, and how you present it, right? I think if it didn't say Jay-Z sings Billy Joel's whatever the song is called, it might be a different thing if you could say, oh, this is not Jay-Z, this is KP. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I wonder. I wonder if that's like, because the interest here is, oh, this sounds like Jay-Z. And it's like, oh, when you put a beat on it, it really sounds like, you know, a weird Jay-Z song that just happens to be this Reddit meme. Yeah. So if the issue is it's getting pulled down because it says Jay-Z, then how long before we come up with the veil that can rest in front of it because people really just kind of want to hear something that sounds like Jay-Z?
I mean, this is also where Twitter is ahead of its time by even having the verified tag. The verified tag has always seemed kind of like a joke, like a status symbol or whatever. But then all of a sudden it matters in a world where bots can, you know, synthesize tweets that sound like various people. And we have bots and they're welcome to play in the Twitter ecosystem. Then all of a sudden it makes me, you know, wonder and want, you know, for YouTube verification, which they already have. And then, you know, even SoundCloud verification or even just file by file authentication saying.
Well, I do think that right now we're not in a position, although I'm sure that for the Jay-Z's of the world, they want to scout out this legal ground. But we're not really, nobody really thinks that that's Jay-Z reading the copypasta thing. Even if we know that it sounds close, maybe.
For the record, had you not primed me by reminding me that that's what he's doing, and you only gave me a random 30-second chunk of that, totally would have believed it. Would have had no reason not to believe it, because I wouldn't have recognized it as the copypasta.
Well, yeah, but that, I mean, so if that's the case, then it's more, you know, not being aware of what it is, and I guess you could, you know, create fake Jay-Z songs. But yeah, no, look, it's a brave new world out there.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. This channel does a lot with presidential recordings because there's a lot of clean recordings of presidents speaking, including this clip of FDR.
What does Marcellus Wallace look like?
What?
What country are you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of. They speak English in what?
English mother. Do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes. All right.
And by the way, this is all before. Is it getting increasingly weird that Adobe had a big old press release for their technology, and then like every second that goes by with them refusing to talk about it or indicate that it's out there or released or whatever, it gets more suspicious? Like, why is that professional grade product that has real value to a lot of media creators of all stripes not out yet? And I
wouldn't be surprised if, like, in Photoshop, there are hidden things in Photoshop in terms of like counterfeiting. Like when Photoshop detects that you have scanned an image of a dollar bill, it says, "Hey, bro, you got to stop that right now. I'm not letting you go any further." And I imagine there's some element of that where they only want certain people to have it, because from hearing some of our friends talk, some people have Adobe Voco. A very tight circle of people who have it. And so I guess maybe it's just like, we have to really control this because there are already people out there making this on their own, and people are going to look to us, Adobe, for the standard of how to handle synthesizing fake voices.
So you
want to build in enough guardrails so you don't become the people that the lawyers come to.
They're building in fingerprinting for authenticity at a very core level.
Right.
And because that takes time.
Because like with images, you know, with JPEGs and PNGs and stuff, you can embed copyright information to it. MP3s, you know, ID3 tags can do that. But if you're a professional, if you're working with high quality audio, like WAV files are very tough to put. My understanding is, as we've seen with
on YouTube, the digital copyright fingerprinting is quite good. And so it may be that maybe behind the scenes, you know, somebody's received word that it's like, hey, we're not where we need to be as far as fingerprinting authenticity on stuff. Could you just delay for a bit or?
Yeah, I totally believe that too, you know, because those systems are not built into every website, you know. And they all work through different vendors. They're not all the same thing. What YouTube uses is different than what SoundCloud, then Twitch, then Facebook. You know, they're all different libraries that they check against.
That is a fairly fundamental question: is do I own my identity? Do I own myself, my likeness, who I am, or whatever? And we've seen cases legally where people have signed that over and then didn't like what was done with it. But inherently, if I don't ever sign anything over to anyone, do I still own my voice, my cadence, even my personality? Because at some point, there's going to be AI bots that are able to reduce any 30 to 80 seconds of audio you hit these emotional beats, you had this cadence, you covered this topic, but with this spin on it. Yeah, we got your number. We can hit a button and have a Brian Brushwood hot take.
And where does, say, copyrighted content? Like, we create stuff. Well, copyright will expire. Theoretically, copyright will expire, or you have Creative Commons and stuff. How does... You know, it's kind of a take on remix culture, and there's only so much progress that's been made in that avenue. Now suddenly you are synthesizing new information from existing published content, not just remixing it and transforming it. So it'll be a very interesting time indeed. You guys want to do
true?
You want to do some picks?
Let's pick it up. Pick it up. Pick it up. Pick it up.
Justin,
Brian? Yeah.
Have you listened to the Duncan Trussell Netflix thing, Midnight Gospel?
No.
I have very mixed up, complicated feelings about it. Number one, I've decided that, first and foremost, I can't stop. I can't stop. I'm going to keep going through the whole thing. Second of all, I have absolutely no stomach for it. And when I say that, I know people are thinking, you know, there's boobs and bursting out guts and all that stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. What I don't have a stomach for is the sophomore college 4 a.m. stoned hippie talk. It's so difficult because it's
well, here, lay out the premise for people who are unfamiliar with it, because it is a unique show,
right? So what they've done is he's been doing podcasting for a very long time, and he's one of my favorite guests when he would show up on Harmontown. He's the guy that got Dan Harmon to start Harmontown as a podcast. Am I right in remembering, like, he went through a cancer journey and things looked pretty grim at one point?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Along this way, he's been doing this podcast. He talks to a lot of, gurus of various variety. The very first episode of this has Dr. Drew Pinsky on there, but apparently, like, giant chunks of the actual audio that you're hearing are these mind-blowing conversations. And I say that without hesitation because very clearly, Duncan Trussell, who I like very much, is very sincerely having his mind blown in these moments. But it's coupled with visuals from Pendleton Ward, the guy who did Adventure Time. It's often telling a totally opposite, surreal thing.
There's a very visual story happening parallel to the conversation, which may be very different.
In the vein of like heavy metal from the early 1980s, that animated movie or whatever.
Like in that first episode with Dr. Drew, their conversation is about the drug crisis policy and good and bad drugs. But meanwhile, the story is the character and the president in this simulated world are in the middle of a zombie apocalypse, and they're fighting their way through the White House and across the country. And so the conversation reference, you know, makes like exclaims about the story sometimes, but the story is kind of its own thing happening.
Yeah, and it's sort of like a, you could see sort of a original content build-up structure where you could tell they went back and got the people to say like, hey, just say these five wild lines and we'll be able to make this
work. A zombie.
Yeah, exactly. That's and then after that, it's, you know, the suddenly tonally it shifts into this deep metaphysical conversation or whatever. I will watch all of this, and part of me will love all of this. Also, part of me will hate all of this because, like, what was it? Episode two, he's talking to a dude from Arkansas who got out of jail and is explaining why magic,
ritual magic
is better than the Eastern religions, because the Eastern religions are designed to help you achieve nirvana in 20 to 30 generations of life and reincarnation, whereas ritual magic is
It's interesting that you read it as him saying it's better, because my recollection of that conversation was that he said that clicked better with him, or that style of teaching worked better.
Either way, we're talking about a lot of hippie stuff. And you're going to have, either you are in the frequency to receive that, and you're like, metaphysical conversations. I think the name is apt. You know, that midnight gospel of you and a bunch of friends having the conversations that are so far beyond the normal. How was your day? You know, kind of stuff. But if you're not in the mood to receive that, then you're just like, oh my God, it's just random words that periodically people are going to say, wow.
I that's the part that is so bizarre to me, is I can't stop watching. Like, I can't tell. I know that if I read these words in a book devoid of all the context of this show, they would enrage me, and I would throw the book away. But
really,
just because there's a lot of dumb, overly simplistic stuff in there. But I really like every single person who appears on it. I really like the authenticity of the conversation. I really like the hyper surrealistic visuals. I really like the art style. Like, I love every single piece of this thing, and I can't understand why I'm just. I will not be able to stop. It's a bit like where we were at with the new Pope, where it's like we had this big come to the Pope moment where we were trying to decide if we were going to keep watching, and all of us held it as a secret that we'll watch all of these, even though they make no sense and they're frustrating and they annoy us, you know.
Ah, interesting.
But they're also beautiful and transcendental or whatever. So that's how I feel about it. So you
did say that you listened to his podcast. Had you listened to any of the podcasts that were used?
I listened to his appearance on other podcasts.
Oh,
and
I see.
He always played the far out there wild card, like just next level. You'd swear that he was high on 75 different things at the same time, but he was so good at just taking a thread and running sideways. It was fascinating, and he was always one of my favorite people to show up on Harmontown. So to hear him be the linchpin, it makes sense that this feels to me like an unguided starship, kind of just going wherever it's gonna go.
You know, I don't have quite the same reaction to, I guess, the content of those conversations as you did. The one thing I think that is really tough for the show to express, especially if you were watching it and you know, if you have an understanding, oh, these are actually just from like a podcast, like. If you don't know the name of someone, it's very much like, well, I actually don't know how much authority to give you. I would like to give you some because, you know, I enjoy hearing your experiences and talking about, you know, how you relate to death or drugs or ritual magic or whatever. And so it's very tough to be like, well, I don't know the name and I don't know where they're coming from. And even sometimes when they're talking about real world stuff, it's like, and I opened the center, like, I don't really know what type of center you opened. And so that makes it a little frustrating because they've cut down these podcasts from however long to part of a 20 to 30 minute animation.
It turns out that the part of a podcast that you think is the most boring, the part where they say, this is my friend so-and-so, we met because of this, they're important because of X, Y, and Z. You're like, get to the good part already.
Right.
absent that, it's like now I am given the homework of pressing pause, going to IMDb, looking at how crappy their layout is of everything, trying to track it down, realizing that the best way to find out who's even talking to is to press pause on Netflix and wait 7 seconds for it to go to the grayed out thing where you can actually see the verbal summary of the episode and it might mention who the guest is. Now I can look up their Wikipedia page. I really agree.
Even that process gets annoying because like the ritual magic guy, you try to look him up, and the first thing that comes up is like this murder, allegedly done by teenagers in the 90s. You go, well, why is this the first thing to pop up? And you realize that is probably the same guy. He doesn't have a very big web presence. And he talks about being in jail. That gets kind of tough. But I really think it's great. And having gone into the first few episodes not knowing that format was like really cool, because it almost feels like an Adult Swim, older Adult Swim type of show, where it's like very limited animation budget. Yeah. And it's very focused on a dense conversation, you know, like 16-ounce mouse or home movies or something, which is not necessarily Adult Swim, but very conversation focused, very,
or even scribblier. What was that super scribbly one? Like even scribblier than Squidbillies or whatever.
Home Movies was in Scribble Vision.
Yeah,
and then there was
Home Movie. Yeah,
the Critic.
Home Movies and
well, like Tim and Eric.
No. Dr. Katz.
Right, but I mean, yeah. Like just lo-fi, like Tim, sure, and Eric. That was pretty much just a low-resolution shoot that they just ran a Photoshop filter on.
Yeah,
and they called it animation.
And so it felt a lot like that, very dense, very conversation-heavy. But it's paired with these really, with you know, very colorful, very bright, very imaginative visual stories. And I think it's very cool how they tell the visual stories without really getting much help from the dialogue. So. I certainly think it's worth checking out. I will co-sign your pick, Brian.
Cool.
Justin, you got a pick?
So in a world before social media, there was a phenomenon that your friends would go on vacation and then they would come back and they would want to show you all the pictures that they took.
I just realized what
this
your pick
was
is.
Bittersweet. Because on one hand, you're excited that your friends got to see some cool things. On the other hand, looking at pictures and videos of other people having fun is only so interesting. And lo, we have the Beastie Boys story on Apple Plus or Apple TV. It's a must watch if you're a Beastie Boys fan. It is, among other things, a loving tribute to the now departed third member of the Beastie Boys, MCA, Adam Yauch. And at times, it really is a credible presentation of what I'm sure was an amazing night in Brooklyn when they put on this show with Mike Diamond, Adam Horowitz, and Spike Jones is kind of this like voice narrating things in the background sometimes. But boy, do you just kind of want a 5-part Beastie Boys documentary series in a world where we have Making a Murderer and Tiger King and OJ and the Jordan doc. You're like, man, there are times that, like, you know, when they go through their separation with Def Jam and they talk about what their relationship with
Russell Simmons.
No. The white one, whose name I'm forgetting.
Russell Simmonson.
No.
Russell Simmonsberg?
Oh my God. No, the one that,
Russell Simmonstein.
Anyway, I actually should be thrown in jail, for not remembering this. Because he's the gigantic wrestling fan. They actually talk a lot about wrestling.
Sugar Knight?
No, God damn it. Anyway,
Vanilla.
I'm gonna kill. I'm gonna actually die. from not remembering this. I'm physically dying right now.
I had that recently when I couldn't access the name Jeff McBride, the magician who was there the day I asked Bonnie to marry me. I couldn't access.
Rick Rubin. Okay. There we go. So they talk about how close they were with Rick Rubin and how Rick Rubin was an indispensable part of their career. And that's great, right? And then they kind of fade apart and there's not a ton there. They go from Russell Simmons being somebody that believed a lot in them to them very much believing that they were basically like a version of Menudo for him. He just really needed white rappers because he needed to get people on the radio. And so it shows you the benefits and the drawbacks of having you tell your own story. And ultimately there is just like, it's only like an hour and 50 minutes and they spend the vast majority of it before, you know, certainly, but before Sabotage, let's, you know, use that as like the line of demarcation. So they kind of just race through like, they race through Hello Nasty. They don't even mention, you know, any of the latter stuff the Two of the Five Boroughs, the album, the instrumental album that they put out. It pretty much after Hello Nasty, you're like 20 minutes away from the end of the documentary. And they're such a sonically interesting band that like, I don't know whether or not they didn't want a music nerd out during the live show or that wasn't as compelling, but like, man, would I love a longer form version of this where they went like way into the samples and way into where they were at the time. It's a must see if you're a Beastie Boys fan, but boy, do they still need the like big multi-part documentary treatment, in my opinion.
Now that's a shame, especially for like kind of a long length feature, right? It's almost 2 hours and feeling like it doesn't cover everything well enough.
I made it about 12 minutes in, and for reasons I won't go into on this podcast, I got frustrated. But 12 minutes in, I think they had gotten as far as the question of who's your favorite Beastie Boy? which was 12 minutes in and we're still on this, huh? All right.
Well, I mean, you know, there's good stuff there, but also it's like, I think it's hard. There's a lot of time spent on how they felt about License to Ill, which they don't mention the original name of License to Ill, which is something that should be confronted in a more documentary sense. But
is that the one with the N word? Was there like an N word in there?
No, the F slur. Oh, don't be an F slur.
Oh, that's right. That's
the original name of License to Ill. And part of it was, They go into the idea that they wanted to be wrestling bad guys. And Rick Rubin is still a massive wrestling fan. And you watch these early MTV hits and these early Def Jam commercials, and it's Rick Rubin being a wrestling character. So there is credibility to that. And the idea that very much they felt that they were making fun of frat guys, and then frat guys started showing up, and then they started headlining Madison Square Garden, and then they realized they didn't want to be that anymore. And that's a great story, but I kind of feel like you are unable to really tell the larger story of why they matter artistically, why they matter pop culture, and why it mattered the most. Whether or not they were in the center of it, they were in the eye of the storm, but like the fact that the Beastie Boys as that band then became this supersonically interesting band that was so much more diverse and important than that initial pull. And yet they were still retaining certain elements of that while rejecting the vast majority of it is like, I don't think that can be told from the inside out. Yeah. Like that's a part of the story, but part of it has to be told from the outside in. And It's again, it's a must watch. Boy, is it a loving tribute to MCA and how important he was in the band. But because he's not there, like, boy, would it have really benefited from an interview with Rick Rubin, from an interview with Russell Simmons, from an interview with Run DMC. Like, you know, there's, I just hope that while all these people are still here, you know, obviously MCA, at least he was interviewed a lot. You know, there that would be interesting. Although I will say that there are some great little touches. Like, they totally keep kayfabe on Nathaniel Hornblower throughout the entire
Director.
That it's MCA's uncle, and you know, they there's winks in like, yeah, this is what we had to deal with. And it's very clearly MCA in a crazy, you know, mustache and wig. But they never break kayfabe on like, oh, that this was a way, like they insinuate that the new label Capitol was like, hey, we need to put you with adults. And you don't really know whether or not this was them saying, oh no, yeah, we have an adult, like MCA's uncle's director, or if it was them just doing a thing.
There was a friend of mine who had a Cartoon Network pilot. I think I can navigate this. Cartoon Network pilot.
Templeton
War. It was going to be the first live action, like, grown-up person introducing cartoons for kids that we hadn't seen that in a while. Another friend of mine, they were like, wait a minute. They're like, well, we need to get this guy a nutritionist because he needs to slim down for the production, and we're on track and we got a thing. He's like, nutritionist, what do they make? And then they're like, well, they make this much money. He's like, great, I'm his nutritionist. And so there was no guidance, no whatever. And so, like, the ongoing joke as he grabbed, you know, another chocolate bar was like, is this okay with you? And you're like, yes, it is. That's your nutritionist. It's fine.
That's funny. I would encourage you to watch it, Brian. I understand that you had some platform problems, but
I mean, I've already paid for it. Might as well look at it.
But it is something where if you want the definitive Beastie Boys documentary, which I think I was secretly hoping for, you will get a couple really, really good friends who went on a crazy vacation showing you all the pictures and videos, and you'll enjoy it.
If anything, it sort of hints to me that that's got to be incoming. There's no way this doesn't become an amazing 5-part series down the road.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I think that there's just, and part of it is just because they are obviously an important band to me, but there's so much there, you know, that is just kind of glossed over. And specifically, as much as, you know, the world has changed in terms of race representation, Me Too stuff, like, they were really on the forefront there.
Appeared on stage jumping around with giant 3.5-foot dongs.
Well, yeah, no, and that's a focus. Like, that is the, you know, they talk about how much they hated the end of that tour, and part of it was like, let's just get to the point where the dick pops out so we can get off stage. Like, that was it. It became so mechanical. They were so burnt out. They hated their crowds. They hated their songs.
Wow.
And that was, they just needed to get away. But also, it's like, there's so much that you want to see more of, and boy, they did a lot of drugs. There's definitely a lot of weed smoking with the Beastie Boys. In fact, that seems to be the biggest change, is that they stopped drinking as much and started smoking more weed. That's really the difference in their sound.
I got a pick.
What you got?
Go. Over the past couple of days, I was inspired by another podcast that I listened to give this a shot. I had never seen it. It's very, obviously, very highly rated. And now I'm about 3 or 4 episodes into the HBO crime drama, The Sopranos.
Oh, a little show you might have
you
heard
might
of.
You might know The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. I think this is really, really cool. I wasn't sure going into it how, I guess, how dated it would feel or how, like one of the things of if you go back to something very influential, much later down the line that you kind of never had exposure to, it itself feels like a ripoff of some of the ideas that it originates or permeates through culture since it came out. You know, I had that growing up. I watched Scrubs a lot because they had Scrubs on Comedy Central every night, and so I'd watched a lot of that. And then at one point, as an adult, someone asked me to watch Grey's Anatomy, and I go, "Oh, I know what's going to happen. The kid's going to die, and he's going to get sad, or like all these very obvious medical drama tropes."
That was my thought experience was like, with trying to watch The Godfather after growing up with every parody of The Godfather, everything ever. Yes. You know, it's just like we tried to watch it. Like, are they serious with all this? None of this is a joke, right?
And ends up not being much of a thing with The Sopranos. There's a little bit of it where you're like, oh, they're kind of doing the, you know, the Italian mob guy bit, but that it's not ironic. That's them doing it in serious, you know, unironic earnestness. And I think it holds up. Like, I think it's a very awesome, you know, serialized drama for the time.
Well, there was that meta element. I think, is it the first scene of the series that one of them's doing the every time that I think that I'm out, they pull me back in thing from The Godfather? Like, he's like it establishes that this is a mob story told in a world where mob stories and movies have all existed. And even though half these actors have been in those other movies, now they're playing different characters. And
who are
you just
aware
know.
Of the reputation and of the tropes,
right?
Because they all have watched The Godfather forever. Like, they would probably love this show. The characters in The Sopranos would love The Sopranos. Well,
and if I'm not mistaken, I believe The Godfather had the effect of sort of codifying the fictionalized version of the mob that appeared in The Godfather wasn't truly a thing until The Godfather came out. At which point,
everyone wanted to be in
that circuit were like, I don't know, it looks pretty badass to me. Let me just act that way and lean into it.
Yeah, and they even reference like Scarface. There's a point where it's like, we got to go Scarface on these guys, the big guns, and I was like, it's very interesting to see it as, I guess, a modern take on modern for the time take on a mob story, right? Like, you've got this guy who is trying to be the leader, but is like going to therapy and having anxiety attacks and his reticence about going to therapy and being seen at therapy and taking Prozac, and he's got kids, and you know, his kids are growing up, and what if they leave? And he's, you know, I think it's a very a surprisingly emotional tale where I don't think you would have seen that in, say, mob stories of the past or previous to it. So
what episode are you on?
I think I'm only on episode 3 or 4.
Okay. The episode College, it might either be your next episode or the one after that.
That's my next
one. Okay. That's really, that was considered to be, and I think I'm curious your take, but that was the first time that it just like stunted on everybody that it's like, oh wait, this show is actually like great. This is actually like awesome. So I'm excited for you to get to it.
Nice. Yeah. I did hear that there was an episode like that pretty early on in the first season. So I'm looking forward to that. The Sopranos, you can watch it on HBO Now right now if you don't have a subscription. You just have to have the app. I think it's on the HBO apps. And
yeah,
the
it's
Hulu
free.
Apps.
And by the way, the way that all these governors are starting to open stuff up, you got to wonder when HBO is going to close that loophole down. So watch it now.
It does kind of feel like everybody is starting to, you know, we've had a couple months of a held breath, and it does start to feel like people are going... just maybe starting to breathe again.
Yeah, we'll see. So The Sopranos on HBO. Well, Brian, Justin, as we always do the show, thank you so much for joining me here as we talked about science.
And we'll wrap it up as we always do. Hooray for weird things!
Hooray, weird things!
Hooray for weird things! Beep, bop, boop, bop, boop, bop, beep. Space rock, damn it, Gary!
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.